But it was the... how you went to Cheltenham, actually, how you first met. I mean, what happened exactly? You were invited
to lunch. We were staying with Wilfrid's parents at Lippiard Terrace, and we were... there were endless conversations on the telephone always, weren't there? And we were invited to lunch.
And was this with E or B?
With E.
With E.
But B was there on that first occasion.
Yes.
And
this was at the Gibbons
House. This was at the Gibbons House at Charlton King's. Yes. And we were summoned in, and we were always invited for a particular time, 23 minutes to 1 or 9 minutes to 1. I think that was a slight family joke.
I think the reason for it was that we very often went out by bus.
Oh, yes,
and the bus arrived at, I don't know, 14 minutes to 1, so you'd be expected, it's 2 minutes walk, you'd be expected 12 minutes to 1.
Was life sort of clearly worked out?
Oh, very.
Well, I think in that case it was, because they were always so terribly fussy about time, but she equally didn't want you to be too early to upset Mrs. Gibbons.
Oh, yeah, who really ran the house,
who ran
the
house.
It was her house, after all, wasn't it?
You see, so that don't come before because of theatre, but don't be late because of me.
Yes.
So what happened, anyway? You arrived at sort of 9 minutes
to 1. Well, we arrived at 9 minutes to 1, and my first impression of Aunt E was a very handsome woman. I remember that her height was very impressive. Although I'm used to tall people, but she was a very impressive woman to look at, wasn't she?
Yes, and her hair kept its colour.
Yes.
She never got grey.
She never became grey, no.
What
no.
colour was it, actually, her hair?
Dark brown, was it? Yes. She had very brown eyes.
And it wasn't dyed, was it?
Oh, no, not at all.
No, not at all.
But very big brown eyes.
Yes, so that she looked younger, I think, didn't she, than probably she
yes,
was.
Yes, yes. Mm.
She was what they call a handsome woman, or she was a striking woman.
Striking, yes, handsome, striking, not in any way pretty
beautiful.
Or beautiful, no. And then, well, I clearly remember being measured against them and trying to decide who was the taller.
What about dress? I mean, what did she do with her appearance then? This is obviously in later life now we're talking. Did she actually dress strikingly, or did she not bother about clothes much?
Well,
I wouldn't have thought she bothered all that.
No, not very much. No, just normally, yes.
Cardigans and skirts and
she had
long.
A cloak that Nicky still has.
Really?
My granddaughter still has a dark blue coat with a velvet collar.
Yes,
velvet collar.
That must have been rather impressive, actually, if she was tall with a cloak.
Yes.
Anyway, what happened after that then? You saw this rather impressive person.
Mm. The lunch was difficult because there was Mrs. Gibbons, who was very deaf, wasn't she? And Aunt E and Aunt B, both of whom were fairly deaf.
Yeah.
And Wilfrid and me.
Yeah.
About what were we? And I was in my 20s. They were all sort of mid-70s, I suppose, then.
Yes,
it was fairly frightening. And the conversation was sort of thrown round like a ball, wasn't it? You changed subjects because somebody hadn't heard the question properly, endlessly, didn't you? It was difficult.
Well, I just think arising out of that, you spend it occasionally, they're both deaf. I used to go and play bridge with them occasionally. They both played bridge until the end of their days.
That's Beatrice and Edith.
Yes, and those awful things used to happen because you would start playing a hand. Something's obviously going wrong, and suddenly one of the aunts said, "We are playing this in four spades, aren't we?" You have to say, "No, actually, it's four hearts." they were deaf. I remember that happening.
Yes. I think towards the end, Mrs. Gibbons had rather difficulty in getting her friends to come and play bridge with E.
Yes.
There was a nucleus who would, you know, decent.
And then Mrs. Gibbons was very proud of her garden, and she knew I was interested in gardening. We were always taken to see the garden, but Aunt E was always very impatient at that point, wasn't she? And she couldn't wait till lunch was over and get you into her room, and you were, Mrs. Gibbons was then dismissed.
That
very clearly, wasn't it?
Could you explain to me, actually, what... Could we just go through what happened to Edith after the end of her autobiography? I mean, she was at the end of the autobiography, I think she's sharing this flat with the missionary.
With Emily Kinnaird.
Yes.
Well, it was Emily, very definitely Emily Kinnaird's flat. She had more or less muscled in. And... Devlin Canal die?
There was no one, thank you, no.
The flat was let at one time because I lived in London then, and I had to go and clear and tidy out the flat because it was going to be let. I think Emily Kinnaird must have died and left the flat to Aoife her lifetime, something like that.
I see, yes.
And then, of course, the war came.
Yes.
And she evacuated herself.
Did she?
To
she
Cheltenham. To
I
hotel,
see.
Hotel at Cheltenham.
Did Presbury, she really?
Presbury yes. Park Hotel.
I see, just as an ordinary paying guest.
Yes,
friend.
Yes.
Yes.
And then she, because her sister Bea was living in Cheltenham, almost next door to Mrs. Gibbons then, and she got to know Mrs. Gibbons very well, and moved, left the hotel and moved in with Mrs. Gibbons when she was living up by Bea. Before they went to Charlton King's.
But she was in the flat in London after the war, wasn't she?
After the war, she...
Oh, yes, because soon after the war, I used to go over there for lunch occasionally.
After the war started?
No, after the finish of the war. I'm sure I used to go to that flat. When I came back from the war.
No, I'm sure it wasn't.
In fact, she ran the two together. They had both for a short time.
I don't think so.
His memory gets a defective as the years go by.
I think
perhaps of the 6 months before the war.
I think you are, yes.
Maybe.
But there was one point when there was talk of them possibly going back to live in London, Mrs. Gibbons, and they went to Berkeley Court and I met them to look over one of the flats there. And, yes, that was rather uncomfortable because the old porter took them round. And when they'd finished, they just said thank you. And he said, thank you, madam. So I hurriedly got into my purse and produced 5 shillings or something, which I gave him.
Yeah. Was that in any way typical? I mean, were they rather sort of academic and absent-minded?
Yes, because there was another story when Mrs. Gibbons, they were in London, they used to stay at St. James's Court, very expensive service flats, and they had a taxi bag, and Mrs. Gibbons gave the taxi driver a threatening bit, which he immediately threw onto the ground.
Oh dear. Was that simply sort of economy or thoughtlessness
I think just old age that you don't realise how things have changed.
Yes.
Mm. No, she wasn't mean at all.
No.
So anyway, Mrs. Gibbons, was she then? A widow living in Cheltenham with a house of her own.
Yes. That's right, yeah.
I see. So instead of living in a hotel, you move into a vacant house, semi-vacant house.
Your friend has a house expensive. Big enough, bigger than she needs, isn't she?
Mm. They each had a sitting room in her common home.
Well, she let Aunt Dee have a sitting room.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was very much her house.
So they contributed to the expenses, presumably. Well, they weren't exactly
paying.
Well,
Mrs. Gibbons was extremely well off, but I think Auntie probably
contributed.
And that's where she stayed, until she died?
Yeah, her death,
I see, which was in sort of about 1956,
I think it was 57 or 58.
57 your father died.
That's right.
Uncle Charlie died very short after him.
It was after all that,
And it was after that.
Yes.
Then Aunt Bea, did Aunt Bea die
first?
Yes, that was 58.
Yes, I think not all that long afterwards.
No.
It was 58 or 59.
So I'd find an obituary in the Times around about that time, I imagine.
Let's find that out.
Don't worry, I mean, I'm sure I could find that out. So really, that sort of settles her residential sort of life. I mean, that's where she was living, sort of thing. Yeah. Why did she choose Cheltenham, actually? Do you know?
Oh, there's quite a family colony. Well, yes.
And your father.
And Mary Temple.
And Mary Temple, yes.
My father and mother lived in Cheltenham in our latter days, and Aunt Bea was already
there. She had a big house there, didn't she?
Yes,
Keith House.
And my father and mother were there, and Mary Temple, who was
a cousin.
Yes.
So it was an obvious place to go to.
And not very far from Wales, too, within reach.
Yes. Yes, I see. Yes. And what did she do there? I mean, she was... just trying to think of the ages. She must have been quite old by the beginning of the First World War, really. She must have been Well, I don't know. How old was she then?
She died. She's 88.
I thought she was 88.
She died, yes. In, say, 1958.
Yes, yes. So in a way, she must have, in a sense, had her career.
Well, I think that's right, yes.
She, the war broke out. Can you tell me roughly what sort of things she did? I mean, with her time, how did she spend her time, say, from 1940 till she died?
I can't help much over this, because I was away all the war.
Mm.
She read a lot, I think.
She used to write to the Times occasionally.
She, after tea, she nearly did a chess problem. She had one of those little folding chess things and did a chess problem after tea. Mm-hmm. Sitting the opposite side of the fire from Mrs. Gibbons. You know, they're on the opposite side of the fire.
When she played bridge.
She read a lot because, bridge, remember, yes. she left a small sum to the girls in the Cheltenham Public Library, because they'd been they'd been so helpful finding books for her and keeping books for her and that sort of thing.
Do you know what sort of things she read? I mean, biographies, politics, that sort of thing?
That sort of thing, I think, yes.
She retained a great interest in politics.
At the end of her days.
I'm not really sure whether she could be truly described as Labour to the end of her days.
I was going to ask you about that, actually. As we were saying earlier, she had great agonies in 1931 as to which side to support. And I wondered whether, in fact, she became disillusioned with the party, you know, towards the end of her life.
I wouldn't have thought that she ever became disillusioned, but I think what did happen was that the sort of socialism for which she fought in her younger days had already come to pass. And that sort of socialism wasn't really needed anymore. She never would have admitted to you that she was no longer a socialist or a member of the Labour Party, but in fact, would you agree with what you sort of said?
Yes, I think that's probably so.
We once, just for the fun of it, went to see her, at least I don't think I did, but Mum did or somebody did, and asked her to sign a petition against the nationalisation of the railways, which she very indignantly rejected.
So, formally
she was still, yes, but I doubt whether really she had heart.
Do you think she voted in her latter days?
I don't know.
Interesting to know what she voted in.
Indeed, yeah.
But she didn't retain close Labour Party contacts, really.
I don't think so. No.
So anyway, she really leads sort of the life of a retired, educated woman living on her own in a sort of spa town.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think she took any active part at all
in activities in
Cheltenham at all.
No, not at all, I don't think.
Not even religious activities.
No, I don't think so.
No, I think the rector used to come and see them. I don't know that they actually went to church very much, but he used to come and see them.
Well, that was probably his initiative, rather than
hers. See, I had a month once when cooking for them, when the cook had a holiday, and I went and cooked for them. So I was there for a whole month, a few years before she died. I don't remember them going to church.
Yeah. And their daily routine was sort of reading, walking?
Yes, going for a little stroll. And
bridge.
Once a week into Cheltenham to the library.
Mm.
Mrs. Gibbons used to buy new books and then sell them back to our second-hand bookshop. So there were always quite a lot of new books about as well.
Mm.
You give the impression slightly of a certain sort of not friction, perhaps, but a certain sort of delicacy of the relationship between Mrs. Gibbons and
I think, yes. There's no question of that.
What exactly was that
in the house, I think.
Yes. Yes.
What was it? Well, just simply the embarrassment of living in somebody else's house?
Really, I think it's because you were such a dominating person, and Mrs. Gibbons was a rather quiet, self-contained person, wasn't she?
And
I think the fact, perhaps, of it not being her house, perhaps made you a little bit aggressive, isn't
it? Yes, possibly.
Mm.
She was always very impatient. And she was also the kind of person you had to stand up to, wasn't she?
Yes.
Mm. And she climbed down very quickly if she was stood.
Oh, did you?
I think she did, you see, yes.
Perhaps you mean you never did?
I don't think I ever did, but I could see that, yes.
But in what ways would she try to drive you then? I mean, did she just always know what was best in any circumstance? How do you feel this?
Well, I suppose she was a woman of very strong views, wasn't she?
Yes, she was.
She wouldn't easily give in.
No.
I suppose, eh? I don't know what I can add to that.
But also rather, I mean, you give the impression of somebody whose brain is very active, I mean, all the way through, I mean, intelligent.
Well, I think, yeah. Oh, yes. No question. Yes. I get better than
that. Yes. I mean, you know, one needs intelligence to play bridge, I think, on the whole, doesn't
one? Oh, yeah, indeed, yeah.
Yeah, she wasn't a good bridge player. She was never a good bridge player, no. Don't know that she played when she was younger. It would have been a waste of time to her then, I think. Yes,
no, but she said to me on one of my early visits, "My dear, when you're my age, you'll be very glad to be able to play bridge." She said, "Are you a bridge player?" And I said, "No, I don't like cards." And she said, "What a pity." She said, "When you're my age, you'll value the ability to play bridge. One of the only things you can do when you're my age."
Yes.
Mm. So she may have taken it to it later in life.
I think you remained remarkably flexible mentally.
Yes.
Really late, more so than her twin sister. rather reverse. Yes. But I must tell you one remark she made, which I just had this ad nauseam, but it amuses me. When somebody told her, it wasn't me, I don't think, that I was going to be a solicitor, she thought for a moment and said, oh, well, I suppose it's all right now, but in my young days a lady didn't marry a solicitor or a doctor.
That sort of rather illuminates sort of contradiction which runs right through the autobiography.
Yes.
You feel that she's, in a way, a very inappropriate person to be a Labour MP in some ways. I mean, she's very much top draw in terms of her background and rather conscientious.
No, more so than Mr. Gates' score or Mr. Act.
Well, no, I mean, it's that sort of middle class socialism contradiction.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, was it felt rather odd in the family that she should, in fact, become a Labour MP? I mean, is there any family tradition about
that? Well, they didn't like it, did they?
No, I'm sure they didn't like it.
My father was the only one who would have.
He
would have approved, but none of the others at all.
Well, I wouldn't know because I was only 10 then or something.
How do you explain it, actually? I mean, knowing her, why should she become a Labour MP, do you think?
Right, they were brought up, all that family, near the Welsh mining areas. And I think they got...
Yes, but then Aunt Bee would never have, would
she? Oh, well, no, I suppose that's true, no.
I wonder whether...
Well, I don't know.
She worked for Barnardo's. She was...
Oh, but very much Queen Bee.
The Queen Bee, yes, I suppose so, yes. She didn't
It grows out of social work, really, doesn't it?
Yes,
I suppose, in the YWCA.
And whether there was some special friend who influenced her, I don't know about that. My first memory of her is her saying, "Come and sit on my knee, Charlie, and tell me what the sermon was about." At the age of 6, I think. Idiweni, after church at Idiweni. I was speechless, of course. I haven't listened to one word of the sermon. And of course at that age took it seriously, you see.
Was she good with children then? Presumably not.
Not very, no.
Rather too formidable.
Yes.
But took a great interest in what everyone was doing, didn't she? She talked to about children quite a lot.
Oh yes, and she was quite good with Caroline. With my daughter, she was she wasn't frightened. I was a little frightened of her,
She was basically a very kind person.
Yes. Once you've got past
the domination.
Yes, and the impatience.
Yes, where does this impatience come from? Is it a sort of acute consciousness of time and its value and so on? Is that it or
couldn't
what?
Couldn't bear to be kept waiting at all.
I think that's a common feature as you get older, I think, isn't it? I think most older people are rather conscious of time, don't like being kept hanging about.
Yes, but I think they were particularly
so.
Your father was impatient in many ways too, wasn't
he? Yes, he was. Must be an impatient family by now.
Anyway, you felt that you had to be there on time with her.
Yes, you'd arrive 10 minutes early and walk up and down.
And we have done on many occasions. We took a bus earlier than we needed to in order to make sure that we were on
time.
And
then if you didn't answer a letter quickly, you'd receive a postcard saying, did you receive my letter? I had that.
Does that mean that she was very businesslike in her habits, really, in dealing with correspondence?
I think she was, yes.
Money
and, yes.
And well-organized person.
Yes.
And, yes.
She had... Before the war, she had a little hut up on Box Hill. Does that come
in the book? It comes in the book, yes.
Yes, I went down for a couple of weekends there, yes.
Because weren't there about four of them who had places nearby?
Yes, her great friend then was somebody called Crystal Macmillan.
Yes,
she comes into the book, doesn't she?
Yes, she's quite important.
I remember meeting them, because she had a little car, a little Morris she used to drive down.
That's right.
Down in.
What was Crystal actually like? I mean, can you remember her at all?
She was a Scot, wasn't she? Rather formidable.
Because she was very interested in the sort of legal aspects of women's status, legal status, and rights, particularly on the international plane. She's quite an important woman. So time, then, is important. And in fact, as you say, she actually edited this little book.
Well, I'm pretty certain that she was over 80. If she died when she was 88, and that was late 1950s, we were married in 1955, and I'm certain that book came out after we were married.
Yes.
I'm sure she was sort of mid-80s, or 84 or so, when she did that work.
The story of Aragon Temple and the Inimitable, that's a family connection.
Sir Grenville.
That's
Sir Grenville. Sir Grenville Temple Temple.
That's right.
Yes, I see.
So this really shows how...
That was the last bit of work that she did, wasn't it?
So presumably she'd need the local library for this sort of thing, and it's one of the reasons...
She found letters, didn't she?
And again, that shows how her interest focuses on the family.
Oh, very strongly.
Yes.
Mm. That was important, wasn't it? The family was very important.
I'm sure.
I think it was, yes.
And Iwenny as a place mattered very much to her, didn't it?
She talked a lot about Iwenny,
I remember.
And she went back there regularly at the end of her days, too.
Yes, not very long before her death. What, 4 or 5 years she went back?
But every year, I think, for a long time, pretty well.
And you feel Cheltenham was chosen?
It was never quite the same to her.
But she used to go back, well, I think.
Yes.
Well, Charlie was still there, perhaps.
Yes,
he gave it up.
I don't know, she went back after her left.
But if you went to see her, the family was likely to be a subject you'd talk about.
Yes, always.
More so than one would normally do. I mean, with anybody who one was related to, you felt it really was a major interest of hers, did you? In fact, it's rather difficult to say.
Yes.
But one certainly does feel that in the autobiography.
Yes.
One feels that, you know, it's rather important to her.
She certainly, she did like to know what people were doing
and
keep in touch with them, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Was she a person who was always reading the daily papers and things like that? I mean, did she keep in touch in that way, do you think?
Oh, I think she used to write quite a lot to the paper. Whether it got published at the Times, whether it got published or not, I don't know. But I think she quite often did write.
Yes. Oh, she did get published in the Times.
She did sometimes, yes.
You're filling out the autobiography, because there's a missing last chapter or two, see which as I say, I've been bursting to know what ought to be in these chapters. I didn't know quite how it all ended. What did she actually do in the war then? She just lived this sort of life in Cheltenham? She didn't do any war work?
Not at all, no.
Anything like that?
No.
Well, she was too old.
She was too old, really, wasn't she?
Yes.
She was quite an old lady by then.
Could you just clarify for me how you're related to her? Because I ought to know this, but I haven't.
Corinne, you're the expert on this. It's not complicated.
Where did your father come in?
Well, our grandmother had three, as you know from the book, three sets of twins. And our grandfather was married three times. He had two children by the first marriage. And his wife died, that comes in the book, I expect.
Yes.
On the way back from India.
Yes.
She was bedded at sea and he arrived back as a widower with these two small children. And then he married our grandmother. And there was a son.
She was the temple, wasn't she?
She was temple, yes. There was a son, a daughter, twin sons, and then twin daughters, these two, E and B. Then my father, and then one who died, and then your father and his twin brother.
Yes.
And then the last son.
So you're descendants of the second wife, are you?
Yes.
Yes,
yes, I see. Could you tell me who your parents are then?
Mine was Frank.
Yes.
Who became a parson. And Wilfred's was Ivor, who was in the army.
And they both call themselves Picton Turner.
Waller. Picton Waller. They were all Picton Waller.
Yours remain Picton Waller.
Yes.
Mm. And my father changed his name in 1932, I think it was, long after the Ironsmith.
So you're both, she was your aunt.
Well, first cousin.
What was she like as an aunt? I mean, was she a person who sent you presents and you visited?
She did to me. Yes.
Indeed, she did. Yes. Thank you. Very good. Yes.
I think she. Well, Aunt B kept up with you.
Yes, she did.
Very much. And Aunt E kept up
with you.
She must have been, I think, particularly fond of my father. You see, that she. Yes.
And Todd. One of them was particularly fond of Todd.
He was very fond of Todd.
Yes. E again. Yes.
Who was another cousin?
Yes.
He was.
Jack's son, wasn't he?
But of course she didn't see much of him until he came back from...
She went to Australia, and then she saw him after
he came back from Australia.
So when you got presents, were they appropriate ones?
Well, I think it was usually money.
I always think that's an extraordinary... That wasn't E, this is B. I always think that's an extraordinary present from a person like that. I've kept it ever since. A red plastic writing case from Aunt B, that was.
Plastic was rather...
It was an unusual present from somebody like that.
Not the
sort of thing you'd know.
When the eldest brother, Charlie, said of her, he said, the best is good enough for B, really just.
Yeah.
What sort of voice did E have? I mean, was it a powerful, carrying sort of voice?
Oh, yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, I think sometimes she made remarks that one would have wished had been in a quieter voice in the public. She once took me, which was a little embarrassing, on a weekend trip up the Seine to Rouen. British Railways, or whatever they were called, Southern Railway then, I suppose. And I remember when we arrived on the boat, she'd taken, I think, third-class tickets, or second-class tickets or something, and she had once asked for the purser and proceeded to get first-class accommodation, which was a great embarrassment to me. I was grown up then.
Mm. With quite a lot of flourish. And
yes, but you know, I think you don't realise who I am. So. He'd probably never heard of her, I suppose. But however, the force of her character was such that she got the first class accommodation.
How was she regarded? I suppose it's a rather different question, but how was she regarded in the family? With affection, but with a slight feeling of humour as well, would you say?
A slight feeling of awe as well, I think, too.
Mm. Oh, yes, stories were told about her always, weren't they? Your parents used to recite the latest that had happened, didn't they? When we went to stay with them.
Yes. I think she certainly regarded with awe by most of the family, didn't you?
Yes.
And I think affection as well.
Yes, certainly by my father with affection, you see.
Mm. So well, I think my father was really very fond of them. I mean, they'd have their set of twos, but Okay, basically, he's very fond of them.
Mm. What about B and E? I mean, what sort of relationship were they as twins? Were they very fond of each other?
Oh, yes, very fond of each other, but could never live together because it was far too powerful personalities. But as you said, they used to ring each other up every day.
Yes.
But weren't they both then sharing this house?
No.
Oh,
they
I
never
see.
Shared, as I remember, no.
No, because you see, Bea, of course, lived with. She had this great friend, Anne McNaughton, that she lived with.
I see, yes. So
they were together in Dr. Bernardo's, you see, joint heads of Dr. Bernardo's, and then they had this house together in Cheltenham.
I see.
And lived together until Anne McNaughton died.
Hmm.
And by that time, he was living with Mrs. Gibbons.
I see, so there's Ian, Mrs. Gibbons,
and Ann McNaughton.
But they could never have lived together, could they?
No, possibly, even if
opportunities had offered.
No.
They just, but that's not incompatible with saying they got on well.
Oh, no, not at all. No, I don't think so.
Oh, no.
So, perhaps I ought to ask you a little about B, because I hadn't quite realised how important she was. I mean, what was her career then, really?
Well, you'll find a lot of the earlier career in there.
Yes.
But she became governor of the girls' village home at Bernardo's, jointly with Anne McNaughton, I suppose. Well, we used to go, when I was a schoolboy, she used to ask us for a week in the Christmas holidays every year. And we used to go to a theatre or something in London every day. But that, I left my prep school in 1928. So she must have been there. It must have been quite soon after.
Having done this munition, run this munition.
Yes, the munitions hostel she ran at
Woolwich. Anne McNaughton, didn't they?
I see, with Lillian Barker.
Yes. And they had a finishing school, hadn't they, in London? Originally.
I didn't know that.
Yes, Mary Crawford had it.
She
and Anne McNaughton had a finishing school in London. Before the war, and then when the First War came, they gave it up, you see.
They both went into munitions work, did they, or just one?
Yes, I think they did both.
Yes, I suppose.
And then after that,
on to Dr. Bernardo's, I suppose.
I see. What as?
Joint governors. It was a huge place with about 600.
The village homes.
Yes.
Barkingside. The girls' village homes at Barkingside.
Is that a paid sort of thing or all
right? Oh yes, that was paid.
I see. Yes. So that was really her career.
Yes.
Doing that. And then she retired to Cheltenham to live with
she and Anne McNaughton thought this very nice house in Cheltenham.
Mm.
She certainly was entirely unpractical. She couldn't doubt whether she could have boiled an egg. Even it was when they went down to this hut, Box Hill, it was a great thing, producing something to eat.
That would be one of the attractions of it, that you were having to cook.
Yes, rather playing at it, yes.
Yes, interesting, yes. She always had servants then, did she, all her life?
She had a maid in her little house in Gayfair Street. She had a maid called Burton, who stayed with her all the time.
And then living in with Mrs.
Gibbons.
And then Gibbons.
Went to the hotel and then with Mrs. Gibbons. She didn't have to worry about that side of life at all.
Mrs. Gibbons ran.
It was Mrs. Gibbons' house.
Yes, I see. But Mrs. Gibbons didn't have servants to do it for
her. They had a cook and a housebound.
Did they really?
Yes, they had two when I first went there.
Cook
and housebound maid. And there was a major disaster if the cook left at all.
Yes.
Somebody like you had to be called in. And
yes.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, there was their standards were such about the days when a maid was sacked for what was it?
That was Aunt Bee's Clay who was sacked.
Oh no, that was getting too familiar.
Yes.
No, Mrs. Gibbons sacked a maid for.
Oh yes, for not dusting the tops of the wardrobes. It was your mother who told me that. Yeah.
No,
and for wiping.
Wiping
her hands on the tea cloth.
Right,
you know the dishcloth. She dried her hands on the dishcloth instead of on the roller towel. And she was sacked. She was sacked for that. But also, Mrs. Gibbons was the sort of person who insisted on the tops of the wardrobes being dusted every day, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But music was important, you were saying, then, to
yes,
me, anyway.
Yes.
I hadn't realised that. So you'd be taken out, would you, when you went to see her? I mean,
when you used to come up to London, didn't she, sometimes, and stay, I suppose, in that service flat, you mentioned, was it?
Yes, but it was before the war that she took me such a lot to...
To
the opera,
after the war, to the Old Vic,
not to Covent Garden, but to the Old Vic.
Yes.
And I remember going to the Cambridge, to Donizetti, one of the Donizetti operas at the Cambridge Theatre. Yes. Yes, she was very keen on opera, very.
With gramophone records as well? Or?
Yes.
A cultivated woman, really, as people were in those days. I mean, literary interest,
yes.
Cultural interest, generally.
Not, I think, pictures much. I don't remember her being interested in the Academy or... Oh, yes, I remember her taking me to the Turners at the Tate Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do remember that.
Mm. Did she actually play an instrument herself at all?
No, I don't think so.
Well, we discovered that her sister B did.
Yes,
played the organ for her brother's wedding.
Did she really? Yes. But of course, I whispered most girls of that class would have.
Well, you watched
them. They probably learned. Yes, they went to the Royal School of Bath. Did they both? He did. I know. I expect they both did.
Yes.
So they'd had a good education.
And in practical, in not being able to cook and so on, but in other ways as well, would you say? I mean, sort of rather unworldly.
Well, just describe a person unworldly.
Not unworldly,
no.
Well, I suppose she was would have been one of these people who would have thought that anything to do with the house was probably rather a waste of time.
When she was brought up in Iwena, they had what, sort of 6 footmen or something in there?
Yes.
And you never had to do it a hand's turn at all, right? And I suppose she never learned to.
Now, if you read those diaries of your grandmother, your step-grandmother, it's really very revealing how little they had to do, isn't it?
Yes, but then some people want to do some of those things, even if they haven't done them as they get older, but I don't think she never would have wanted to.
Yeah.
Did she never drive a car?
Oh yes, she had this little car.
Oh, did she?
Yes, that we went down to Box Hill in. And then there was one famous occasion when she was on the way somewhere with somebody and it burst into flames, so she just got out and abandoned it, I think. And never had another one after that.
Because one quite often comes across, I mean, they quite often, pioneers in the way, we quite often do drive rather
erratically, though somewhat
erratically in this case. I don't know whether that was so in her case, but...
No, I think she was all right.
But Aunt Bea had a huge car in Cheltenham, didn't she? Which was highly dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember your father exclaiming about that. Mm-hmm. She was driving that when she was well over 80, wasn't she?
Was she running?
Mm-hmm. Yes, huge red Austin...
Princess or something. It was a big car, wasn't it?
Yes.
You never heard her speaking in public, I suppose, on a sort of formal occasion?
I never did anything.
No. The only time I might have, when there was a big lunch for some women's society, I've forgotten what it was, and she was the hostess. And it was a yearly thing, and usually Barbara used to go and help and sort of bring the people forward and say their name. And Barbara couldn't that year, and she asked me to go. So I think she probably did speak at that lunch, but I can't remember now.
Could you imagine her holding the floor quite easily?
Yes.
Did she... you feel that religion wasn't really then in the later part of life, overtly anyway, very important? I mean, it was quite important to her in the 20s.
Oh, I think it still was.
Was it?
Yes.
But not enough.
I think she probably read quite a lot of religious books and that sort of thing, even. But not to go out to church.
Mm. But she was interested in the subject.
Yes.
Because she is one of the pioneers, really, in really pushing for women's equality
in
the church.
Yes.
one of her specialisms in the 20s, anyway. Together, Maud Royden's another, of course,
yes.
At that time. But no progress so far been made.
No.
Well, not much, anyway.
I think she just lost her fighting spirit, didn't she?
Yes, I think that's probably true.
Even the last 15,
yes.
15 or 20 years almost of her life.
You think so? I mean, that
she was still interested in everything, but didn't want to
yes, I see.
be involved
anymore, I think.
Just because she was too old, you think? I mean, there wasn't any sort of...
Well, I suppose the war coming made such a difference to everything, didn't it?
Mm.
My sister was B was an extremely religious person too. She had the Archbishop of Canterbury's diploma in theology. When she was down in the village home, I remember she used to stand up and preach in the big, huge chapel there.
Did she?
Every week, yes, and it was good too.
I hadn't realised.
All dressed up,
and in a precarious hat thing. But she took to spiritualism in her old age.
Did she?
Yes.
I mean, their relationship then was of interest in what each other was doing. I mean, they talked to each other.
Oh, yes.
Well, very much so, I should think.
Yes. And what was there a sort of fellow feeling of temperamental affinity? I mean, were they fond of each other because they were like each other or complementary, do you think?
They weren't much like each other at all, were they? Not in mind, anyway.
Mm.
And Aunt Bea, I would call an arch conservative, I think. I suppose, in a sense, I suppose, must be an affinity between twins, I would thought.
Were
anyway.
They identical twins?
Yes, near enough.
Near enough.
Yes.
They seemed, to an outsider, remarkably alike. But that was only their appearance and their formidable manner, I suppose.
Yeah, yes, but...
But they were, in fact,
underneath.
Very different people, were they, underneath, yes.
And I suppose that's partly an attraction of opposites.
Yes.
He had much simpler tastes in clothes and food and all
yes,
that.
Aunt Bea was a great gourmet, wasn't
yes.
she? She used to write off
yes,
to the Shilling Coffee Company and order rich fruitcakes and
yes,
didn't she?
And much cleaner on clothes, dressed much better.
Oh yes, and she spent
yes.
a lot on
she
clothes.
Spent,
didn't
yes,
she
spent, yes. He wouldn't want to, would never have spent a lot
no.
on her clothes.
No.
Yes, that leads me to something I did want to ask you. Was Edith... in a way rather mean with herself, that is, rather reluctant to spend money on things that she would label extravagances, but which you and I would regard as quite normal things, like taxes or clothes.
Wouldn't
or
have
something.
Thought so.
No, I think she just didn't want them particularly.
Mm. She didn't accumulate things.
She never had as much money as B, I suppose, because B must have been well paid at...
She lived there, it was all fine.
And lived there,
B had a chauffeur, and she lived quite grandly, didn't she?
Yeah,
really? And that Cleef house
yeah.
was certainly a big house,
it
wasn't
was,
it, Jodhman?
Yeah, so he was never short of money, I don't think, but hadn't got a lot to spend.
She hadn't got extravagant tastes at all.
No, she hadn't, no.
Yes, it wasn't so much that she wanted to spend money and couldn't.
She didn't want to.
Because her tastes and interests were mainly sort of intellectual.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm.
Reading and things like that. Yeah. What about nature and the open air and all that stuff? I mean, was she fond of walking and views?
You've seen her entry.
No.
Her hobby is walking cross country with a silent companion.
Well, the companion had to be silent, so she didn't have to be silent.
So did she walk a lot in...
In her younger days, she did a lot, I think, yes.
Yes, she couldn't tolerate what she called chitter-chat at all.
Mm.
So then, if you hadn't got anything to say, well then don't say it.
Silent, yes.
If you hadn't got anything worth saying, I mean, don't say it.
That sort of excludes all small talk, then?
Yes.
Mm. Rather terrifying, I would have thought.
Yes, well,
she
could be very rude. If somebody was chitter-chatting to her, she could cut them off in rather a rude way.
But this actually features in Who's Who. I hadn't realised that.
Okay,
I've got that. Oh, yes.
Well, it's splendid. Walking across country with a silent companion.
Well, one can understand. I think it's a good description, really.
Mm. Yes, and she was keen on swimming, too.
Was she really?
Yes, bathing. Then a bee, if they ever was.
What, into later life? Sort of in her 70s or so?
Yeah, I don't know about as late as that. But after the 60s, I should think, yes.
Because I wanted to ask you really about health generally. I mean, did she have any fads or dietary?
No, nothing at all.
Or vegetarian or anything like that. Just entirely all
the time. Yes, and on the whole, very good health.
Well, I think you need it if you're striding across country like this. I hadn't seen that.
Well, recreations, walking across country with a silent companion, swimming.
Sure. Thank you. No, 1944. This and one of the things you said, there's a certain sort of awareness of one's importance. So did you feel that with her, that she was a little bit proud of her reputation and conscious of her?
Oh yes, and also of knowing important people.
And
she did make quite a lot of that, I think.
Yes, she liked her OBE to be put on after her name. Yes. She wrote to her, that sort of thing.
That's not the same as saying she's snobbish.
No.
I mean, it's more that she's keen on your knowing that she's connected with influential or
I think really.
So that was in politics rather than in class, you see. Yes.
I think she was proud of her career and didn't bother conceal the fact.
But there's no need for her to be snobbish in a sense because she's well born,
exactly.
Speaking.
Yes.
She, there's no need for social climbing or anything like that.
No,
she's
not
at
all.
Top already.
Yes.
In a way. Yes. Well, that's interesting. I mean, it is quite an impressive career, really, when you read it. But it does, of course, stop here about 1939 or so.
Yes. Well, it wasn't much after that, I think.
Did she talk very much about her earlier career, about the suffrage period, or about her earlier activities in the women's movement, YWCA, or was she always looking forward, one of those people always really talking about the latest current events?
She never talked to me
much
about that.
She didn't know, she may have two friends who might not have thought that we were interested in that.
So she was aware enough to be conscious of the need to avoid boring people. I mean,
I didn't know about that. I think she wanted to talk about it. She would have.
Yes.
But why she didn't, I don't know.
Old age. She just sort of faded.
Well, no, not exactly that. She had this lack of blood to the brain and went slightly mental.
Yes, she did.
Quite suddenly.
Yes.
And she actually was sent to the mental hospital.
Yes, she was sent to the doctor.
Mrs. Gibbons couldn't cope.
Yes.
And she didn't lived about a month, I think. That was it, or a bit
longer. As long as that even. Certainly not longer, quite a short time.
Luckily it was.
So she started.
Only she was getting a little bit difficult before, because I had a letter from Mrs. Gibbons saying you must come and take our aunt away. I can't stand her any longer.
What did you do with that?
It was awful. It was when I was cooking for the Hensons down at Ringstead. And, well, I went to the telephone and things calmed down. She calmed down and was a little bit better. And then she got suddenly much worse, and so there wasn't any question that she had to go. The doctor said
just
she was
started using most appalling language.
Yes, well, it does happen.
Perhaps one ought to record that, but it is in fact so.
Yes.
Astonishing.
You wonder how she knew it.
How she knew it.
Barnwood, wasn't that? That was the place outside.
Yes, but would it have seemed so extraordinary to us, or was it only to Mrs. Gibbons it seemed?
I can't remember who told me that. It wouldn't be Mrs. Gibbons. I think it was my mother.
Your mother, I think.
In the hospital, she did. Or before she went?
Before she was taken away, I think, from the hospital, yes. Oh, well, perhaps it was just simply the shock Mrs. Gibbons, which wouldn't have taken much to do.
Yes, no, I think that might have been the same. Yes.
Anyway, this didn't last for very long. May I ask you, how did you come to be her executor? I mean, you were her favourite niece, were you?
Well, she got to know me best, I think, because I lived in London, and she had been so fond of my father.
Yes, of course.
And you were an only child, weren't you?
I was an only child, yes.
So in a way, I suppose in a way, the autobiography, if it could have been finished, would have a slightly sad ending, but you know, no more sad than most people, I suppose, perhaps. But rather sort of long Indian summer before the end, really.
Yes,
that's how it finishes, isn't it?
Yes.
Is there anything else about her that you'd like to sort of bring out? What about actually old age? What did she get impatient with being old? Did she dislike getting older?
No, I don't think she did. I think she was very good about that.
Well, yes, I think she did grow gracefully.
Yes.
She sounds a real...
Did she have many friends and children at that stage? She relied on your parents.
And your parents, Mary Temple and B, you see.
B was there, yes. In fact, mostly family.
Yes.
And at the three age she went to town, we don't really make much in the way of close friends, do
you? No.
And she never seems to have had a desire to go back to London after the war. Presumably she established connections.
Well, what do you think she was?
Time plays tricks with one man, but I thought that I used to go to lunch with her quite regular for a time. When I came back from articles after the war, I may be wrong about that.
When did you start living with Mrs. Gibbons? She evacuated herself to the hotel. I didn't think she ever went back after that.
Well, do you know when she went to the hotel? I got my diaries.
Before the bombing started, I think right at the beginning of the war.
Well, clearly she was there in 1943 or thereabouts, didn't you? I've got my old 1946-7 diary somewhere.
It doesn't matter desperately. I just wonder what the overall pattern of her life was, you know. And clearly it's basically Cheltenham later on, though, whatever the dates are. And you said, I think, over lunch that she mellowed a bit. In what way, really, do you notice that? I mean, just that she became less forthright, perhaps?
I think perhaps her judgments became less harsh, too. They could be very fierce for something they disapproved of, both of them. Yes. I think perhaps in that way she...
They very much disapproved of Eleanor, did they?
They did, yes.
Oh, very much.
Yes.
And never really had anything much to say to her after that?
No.
May I ask what that was?
our cousin Eleanor, whose address we've just given her. Mrs. Gring.
Yes.
Left her husband after they'd been married for, 27 years or something.
She took Annie Winnie after her.
She took Annie Winnie after
father Charlie.
After Uncle Charlie, who was the elder brother of the EMB. She suddenly just left and got a divorce and married a naval officer, Irish naval officer.
I think it was as much letting down the family.
I don't think it was entirely they disapproved of divorce. I think that's
letting down the family. Yeah. I think
And then she deserted Iwene and walked out on it.
Yes, which she had.
Which she did.
So Edith has quite high principles.
Oh yes, very much so.
Yes, because I think she was a little sad about Todd's divorce at the time.
Mm.
I know she told me she'd said to him, "You've made two two women unhappy, and he said yes. Of course, she knew Betty quite well. She.
Yes.
So really, when you went to visit her, you felt you had to be on rather on your best behaviour.
Oh, very much so indeed, yes.
She wrote to me when I became engaged, and Richard wrote like this, but I still have the letter. Again, I could look it out if necessary, but she said, "I think you're a very lucky girl. Wilfred is pure gold, underlined."
No, that's very helpful. Anything else you'd like to say, I mean, before we switch off? I mean, we've got over, gone all round her life, really, in a way, as she was in the later thing.
Just come back to her, the point about the diaries and things being missing. She might have made to you, or has it never left your possessions?
Oh, yes, she made a remark to me years and years ago, before I was married. Never be a slave to your possessions. I think it was when she was leaving her little house and getting rid of quite a lot of things, you see. And she said, "I know so many people who say, I can't do this and I can't do that because they've got a house full of possessions."
That might go somewhere to explaining.
To explaining.
Why that, yes.
Because when you think of that house with Mrs. Gibbons, Mrs. Gibbons' house, Auntie E really only had
that one
rather bare sitting room. There wasn't a great deal in there.
There was very little.
Some furniture and not
even
very
many
books.
She had a
books.
Bureau, but there was very little in it.
Yes.
All beautifully tidy when she died.
Was it?
Very little
yes.
in it.
And she didn't have much in the way of possessions in the rest of the house at all,
no,
I think.
No.
Just a bedroom.
Oh, no, nothing.
I never saw the bedroom, but...
No, nothing much.
Nothing much at
clothes,
all.
No.
But I think the rest of the house was entirely Mrs. Gibbons' possessions.
Absolutely.
So she must have got rid of an enormous
yes.
amount of stuff. And that you didn't find trunkfuls of...
Oh, no, there was nothing else at
no.
all.
And money, you say she managed quite carefully, not having a lot of it, but not needing a lot. And so that side of her life was well tied up.
Mm.
Yes, whether she could have gone on having a little house of her own and a maid, one doesn't know, because it didn't...
She never showed any signs of discontent with her life there at all, really, did you?
Not a bit,
yep. Was she actually a happy person, would you say, or maybe happy?
Oh yes, definitely.
With a sense of humour?
Yes, yeah, I think so. Yes, I think so.
Yes,
she certainly wasn't devoid of a sense of humour.
Yeah.
But not of the joke-telling sort, presumably.
No, not at all.
More as a rise of appreciation of personality or what, really? Difficult to pin that sort of thing down.
Yes.
I mean, she would laugh, would she?
Oh, yes.
I don't think she had much a sense of humour against herself.
No.
You've got to be a fair comment. No, I don't know. I don't think she saw the joke when she was presented with the anti-railway nationalisation petition.
No,
but not without a sense of humour.
She wasn't anti-drink or anything like that, was she?
No.
Aunt Bea was in her younger days. No, I don't think he was.
I don't know if she ever was she? No,
but
she
liked her.
She liked her. Glass of sherry and that.
But she didn't give you the sweet cocktails that Aunt Bea specialised in, did you? I still got her books of cocktails here.
Lots of non-alcoholic ones.
No, they were sticky. No, they were highly alcoholic.
I finished the thing finished considerably earlier.
What about makeup? I mean, presumably she wouldn't use makeup, would she?
Oh, well, now that's interesting, because she didn't at all, or put creams or anything on her face, but Aunt B obviously had, because I remember them both coming into the garden, Aunt B's house in Cheltenham, and noticing that E was rather sunburnt and slightly lined, and B was much clearer complexion and not so lined, and I thought to myself then, you see, that's because B's looked after her face and E hasn't bothered.
We give you an interesting example of the difference in mentality between those two. Two remarks that B made, which I don't think E would ever have made. One was when I she started going on about something, I rather rashly started to argue with her. She just looked at me and said, it's no use arguing with me, I know I'm right.
That was B.
That was B. And another time, she got on to the Mau Mau.
Yeah.
And they said, what do you think about it? And I said, well, before I'd had time to say anything, I'd string up the lot and make sure. You would never have said either of those things.
No. She's a softer person, is she? More liberal sort of person?
I think so, yes. I think that's right. Yes.
But there were so many forthright English women around, weren't there, at that social class level at that time.
Yes.
A lot of these features are just common, aren't they?
Yes.
A lot of women, really.
Well, there's one other small thing. This was a few years before the war. She was taking a group of people to have lunch with Lady Astor. Who they were, I can't remember now. About six or eight of them, I think, were going. And when they arrived, the butler said they were not expecting me. It was the wrong day. However, she absolutely insisted. And an extra table had to be laid for her party.
And she could get away with it.
She got away with that, yes. Mm. With Lady Astor, yes.
My goodness, yes.
Yeah, she was rather proud of that story.
Oh, she actually told that story. She, well, that is something, isn't it? I mean, that shows, in a way, that's telling against herself, isn't it? Unless maybe it's somebody else's fault that the engagement...
Well,
to her credit, of course,
wasn't
it?
Yes, to her credit. The force of her personality.
Yes.
Well, that's tremendously helpful.
Yes.
This is when the bill was...
That's right, the day
actually
after
that
the
was
bill.
In Duke Street before
Duke
we went
Street,
to,
was it,
yes.
The day after the bill received the royal assent, it came down from morning prayers, and Emily Kinnaird, then aged, I suppose, what, 60 or 70, said, and we thank thee, Lord, for the passing of this act, which will be of such inestimable benefit to all us women.
I don't know how many women have been...